Hello, this is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 30th of August 2019. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Carol Fraser, Jane Thomas and Sue Gannaway. Your readers today are Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Jane Rutter.
Hello.
And Frieda Bates.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Tom Williams. The main headlines this week are Council Concerns Over M3 Revamp, Video of Inmates Rioting Inside Prison, and Winchester school leavers celebrate GCSE success. So may we have the story behind the first headline now, please, Daphne?
And this is Council Concerns Over M3 Revamp. Civic chiefs have voiced concerns about the environmental impact of the £130 million revamp of the M3 at Junction 9. That comes as the consultation over the Highways England project, which is set to begin overhauling the notorious motorway bottleneck at Winnall in 2021-22, closed. In its consultation response, Winchester City Council, WCC, will tell Highways bosses they want to see more of a focus on reducing the environmental harm of the work, although protesters staged a die-in on the steps of Winchester Guild Hall and said the council was not going far enough and called for the scheme to be scrapped. The letter to Highways England, which was signed by Service Lead for Built Environment, Julie Pinnock, and was set to be approved by the City Council's Cabinet as the Chronicle went to press, said, "More work is required to address a range of issues. In the context of the location and the landscape and ecological sensitivities of the surrounding area, it is considered that greater effort needs to be applied to identifying tangible positive benefits for both the environment and the wider population, including in relation to the local context of the scheme and the priorities of the council to achieve carbon neutral across the whole district by 2030. To achieve these outcomes, WCC is ready to engage in meaningful discussions on a range of issues." The letter added, "The council does not consider that sufficient regard has been given to the potential impacts during the construction phase. If not adequately addressed, these could have significant impacts on the health and well-being of residents and people visiting the city centre. The PEIR, Preliminary Environmental Impact Report, document does not appear to give adequate weight to the loss of habitat or attempt to outline the type of habitat to be lost and whether the new habitat which is to be created is of the same type or different. It would appear that the document seeks to put into context the potential increase in GHG, greenhouse gases, by comparing those related to this specific scheme against the total UK carbon budget. This obviously produces what appears to be a very low figure, 0.165%, which is then used to support the position there is no significant effect on climate change resulting from this scheme. This is considered to be an inappropriate use of the data upon which to base conclusions. Whatever measures are adopted, an increase will result. An analysis should be provided of the local impacts." As previously reported, the plans sparked protests from environmental campaigners. Earlier this month, Extinction Rebellion held a die-in in the city centre and returned yesterday for the cabinet meeting. James Miller, 42, an IT consultant from Badger Farm, Winchester, was one of those at the Guild Hall and said, "We don't want the M3 Junction 9 changes to happen. We intend on ensuring the City Council objects. Mr. Miller added that the response in the report was woefully inadequate. It focuses entirely on mitigation measures. He said it would take a forest the size of Winchester to mitigate the carbon effects of traffic on the motorway due to increased vehicles, and asked if they would only be happy if the plans were scrapped. Mr. Miller said, absolutely. The Cabinet meeting was also due to hear from the Winchester branch of the Green Party, who were expected to call for the scheme to be scrapped. In a statement, a spokesman said, the Winchester Green Party is calling on the proposed changes to Junction 9 on the M3 to be cancelled and instead to use the funds to improve the transport changes in Winchester through environmentally beneficial schemes. Encouraging increased traffic capacity at a time when we should be looking to reduce greenhouse gas emissions is irrational. Highways England has been approached for comment, and that's illustrated by a couple of pictures, one showing the notorious junction as it is at the moment, and the other showing some protesters from Extinction Rebellion, by the look of their banner, lying down on the steps of the Guildhall, looking as if they're dead.
Video of inmates rioting inside prison. 19 prisoners broke out of their cells using utensils and cutlery from the kitchen to scrape holes in the walls of their cells. Before an anti-riot squad restored order on Tuesday night of last week, the inmates, some wearing masks, smashed things, threw bricks around, donned prison officers' clothing, and one can be seen waving an officer's baton. Another let off a fire hose and sprayed it around the wing. The video was shot by inmates inside their cell, and they can be heard laughing at the behaviour of other prisoners. It can be seen on our website, hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Cody Lashy, a former prisoner, now prison reform campaigner, who released the footage on his YouTube channel, criticised Winchester Prison, which dates from the mid-19th century. He said the incident stemmed from the poor conditions. Prisoners are housed in certain Victorian prisons that are rife with cockroaches, mice and even rats, and the criminal justice system is as broken as the prison entering it and leaving it. Those Victorian prisons are more reminiscent of Dickensian Britain than the 21st century Britain. The Victorian prisons are dilapidated, decrepit and not fit for animals, let alone prisoners that the Ministry of Justice are trying to rehabilitate. Prisoners will seek to go after weakness, whether that be in another prisoner, a prison officer, lapses in security, or in this case, the walls housing them. Prisons should be places of decency, with humane conditions, with purposeful activity, based solely on rehabilitation. But the ministry is obsessed with opening new prisons and creating more prison places when the prisons we have are crumbling and falling down. Winchester was placed in special measures in early 2018 because of concerns at staffing and the conditions.
Winchester School leavers celebrate GCSE success. Winchester pupils have been celebrating success after receiving their GCSE results. Young people from across the district will now be taking the next step as they move into college, an apprenticeship, or full-time work. The Henry Beaufort School results increased for the fifth consecutive year, although when asked for the overall pass rate, the school were unable to give a percentage. Head teacher Sue Hurl said, "I would like to take this opportunity to thank the students for their determined approach to their studies, as well as the outstanding commitment of all my colleagues, who were relentless in their pursuit of success for our young people. The students were always up to the challenge, happy to face anything that faced them, and that is absolutely crucial. The relentless hard work of the teachers has also paid off exceptionally. They have put unique learning into play and created bespoke packages for the students that needed it. Congratulations to you all." Around 83% of students attained a grade 4 or above in maths, and 82% achieved a grade 4 or above in English. Students achieving a grade 4 or above in both maths and English hit 78%, a 2% increase on this time last year. Martha Lowry's, or Lowry's, sorry Martha if I've got it wrong, 16, scored a grade 7 and above in all of her subjects, which included art, history, English literature and physics. She told the Chronicle, "I'm really happy. I kind of expected to get good results, but this is more than I could have asked for. Now I'm really excited to go to Peter Simmons to study French history. I'm not entirely sure what the dream is. I'm just going to see what happens. But this is certainly a good starting point." The 329 pupils leaving King's School now look to the future. This year, the school's overall pass rate hit 86%. Head teacher Matthew Leeming said, "It is always delightful to see young people we know to be well motivated and determined become well qualified as well. They've worked very hard as a rule. I would say that teenagers we work with today are even more conscientious than their predecessors were. The staff deserve great credit too. I am lucky to work with such a skillful and committed group of professionals." Perrin's school results improved from last year, but the school was unable to provide an overall pass rate. Head teacher Steve Jones said, "Our whole school focus on ensuring that our students pass, our students gain not just the standard passes, but achieve higher grade passes in core subjects. This has paid off. These provide students with the baselines required for all future courses of study." What is especially pleasing is that we have seen a major increase in the E-base measure, where 37.5% of students received a standard pass. In brackets, 2018 national figure was 24%. But more importantly, nearly 30% of students achieved a strong pass, up to 11.5 percentage points on our excellent 2018 figure. This demonstrates that our staff and students are able to show success holistically and provide the best possible framework for the exciting future of our young people. Congratulations to our top performers this year: Maisie Tween, Austin May, Oliver Sorder, Abby Rayner, Seb Cross, Meg McGonigal, Ellen Parker, Amelie Parrish, Freddie Besley and Hannah Chamberlain, all scoring 78 points and above. We are extremely proud of all our students and staff, and this is the start of our new curriculum approaches, which indicate further gains for future years. Exciting times ahead. The Westgate School is celebrating an overall pass rate of 88.7%. Head teacher Faye Dean said, "The Westgate School is celebrating the tremendous achievements of pupils in Year 11. It is lovely to see so many happy young people who are looking forward to the next stage in their learning journey. We look forward to hearing of their future success and, of course, send our sincere thanks to their families for their support and partnership, which has been in no small part what has led to such exceptional outcomes." Girls at St Swithin's, an independent boarding school, are also celebrating standout grades, with the school reaching a 100% pass rate. Headmistress Jane Gandy said, "I am delighted with the achievements of the girls across the challenging curriculum. This is a cohesive and friendly year group which has excelled in all areas of school life in a typically understated way. As well as hard-working and committed students, their numbers include award-winning musicians and composers, international sportswomen and talented actors. They thoroughly deserve their success, and we look forward to welcoming them into the sixth form in September, where I'm sure they will continue to make a broad-ranging and energetic contribution to school life." Countrywide secondary schools are reporting that 69% of pupils taking the exam achieve a pass at grade 4 in English and maths, compared to 67% last year.
That concludes the news headlines, and I continue with the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Attree, Derek Ronald Attree, after a brave fight with cancer, aged 72. Burdett, Jane Burdett, peacefully at home in Chandler's Ford, aged 85. Mitchell, Peter Robert Mitchell, aged 82. Morehouse, Derek Edward Morehouse, peacefully, aged 90. Nicholson, Frieda Nicholson. Pierce, Derek Anthony Pierce. And Rollinson, Megan Rollinson, aged 90. Christian comment this week is read by Daphne. Thank you, Daphne.
And this week it comes from Rosemary Baker, and it's headed Making Sense of the Amazon Fires. Struggling with finding a theme for this week's Christian comment, this being the ordinary, that's with a capital O, part of the church lectionary, and no obvious set themes that I could find, I turned to the news. Not Brexit, I thought. So what about the G7 summit in France and the fires in the Amazon rainforest? And then those in Siberia and Alaska? In fact, there seem to be quite a lot of serious forest fires throughout the world. This strikes me as something which didn't used to happen, or at least not with this frequency. I learnt from hearing the news that the G7 leaders were very concerned, at least about the Amazon, and were apparently blaming the president of Brazil for allowing it to happen. In their wisdom, the leaders of these great nations had agreed to help manage these fires by donating $20 million. This was a trifling amount, according to respectable conservation agencies. Brazil's president at first accepted and then apparently turned it down, saying the G7 leaders were treating Brazil like one of their own colonies. And they spent this money instead on the reforestation of Europe. I was quite shocked, but after further reading, some papers without a political stance, as well as the conservation agencies mentioned previously, I am beginning to agree with him. We have deforested much of our own woodlands to supply wood and also to increase the land available for agriculture and house building. Also, he is right in saying much of the need for more land in farming in South America is because of our demand for beef and soya. I had thought that many of these fires, at least the spontaneous ones, were due to global warming. When trying to find my own denominational, that's Methodist, view on the fires and indeed on global warming, I was surprised to not be able to find one. So if there is one, it's not very easy to find. I was also surprised, although I'm not sure why I was surprised, to learn that not all Christians accept that there is such a phenomena as global warming. I had thought President Trump was a bit out on a limb in not believing in it, but apparently not. A lot of conservative Christians are also of this view. We are approaching the harvest season and the time of year when the lectionary provides readings on creation. So it is worth spending a moment looking at the relationship we have with the earth. All the world's faiths, as far as I can ascertain, believe that this relationship is crucial to our well-being. The Bible in both the Old and New Testaments contain teachings on how we should respect the earth and creation. Perhaps we all need to read and learn more about how to do this. I know I have already added to my knowledge and changed some of my view.
Moving on to letters to the editor, the first letter is read by Jane. Thank you, Jane.
What crackdown? Sir, I read with some amusement the article in the Chronicle, August the 15th, suggesting that the police are to crack down on speeding drivers. Sadly, I do not believe this will apply to Springvale Road in Kingsworthy. In their wisdom, the speed limit was reduced from 40 miles an hour to 30 miles an hour a while ago for safety reasons. However, it seems that this was never to be monitored or policed, brackets, lack of resources. So vehicles still seem to think the road is a racetrack and the speed limit there is a joke. Perhaps someone will suggest to the very stretched police authority that vehicles travelling at up to 60 miles an hour in a built-up area is not really the object of the exercise, and perhaps we may see a speed monitor vehicle in the road in the near future. We live in hope, and that's from David Tate, Meadowland in Kingsworthy.
The next letter is called Empty Houses, and it's from Simon Lever, who lives in Juniper Close, Badger Farm. Sir, the statistics presented in the editorial in the Chronicle, August 22nd, are indeed alarming. Considering the number of new houses that are being built on open pastures instead of brownfield locations, plus the planned estates, which are almost new towns, that are attracting opposition and further scrutiny, surely other ideas could be introduced to address the potential housing shortage. Vacant properties are a potentially challenging issue. They have to be owned by someone. It is impossible to ascertain whether a property is occupied or just terribly run down.
And the next letter comes from G. Budd, and it's headed Barbaric to Drop Drug Testing. Sir, others and I think that the idea to not proceed with the front-of-house drug testing service, The Loop, this year at Boomtown Festival was barbaric, considering it provided such an invaluable and life-saving service to festival-goers in attendance over the past 2 years. Additionally, the last-minute decision to pull such service without leaving the festival organisers enough time to find an alternative seems unfathomable. My daughter and her friends attended the festival for the second year running and were camped in sight of one of the larger medical and welfare tents. As teenagers themselves, they commented on the sheer volume of medical Kubotas leaving and returning to the tent as being utterly ridiculous and almost continual compared to the year before. The medical staff at the festival do an excellent job, but I strongly believe that if the front-of-house service had been in place, the requirement for the unprecedented levels of medical attention would be reduced. For not 1 minute am I suggesting that every single person that attends Boomtown takes drugs. However, it is inevitable that drug-taking will happen. At least, with a service such as The Loop, individuals can find out what they are taking and any dangerous substances flagged up promptly before it is too late. I would urge the government to invest and make such service compulsory for not Boomtown alone, but all festivals situated throughout the United Kingdom, as I believe it really does save lives. As an overall outlook, the festival this year seemed to run very smoothly without many glitches. It is also lovely to see the improvements, specifically with regards to the 70% waste reduction this year and mission to support the environment. Additionally, the 20 noise complaints are minute in correlation to the surrounding population. And that comes from G. Budd, Hinton Hill, Hinton Ampner.
This letter from Peter Lydiard of Parchment Street, Winchester, is headed Conscientious. Sir, it was interesting to read Steve Brine's letter from Westminster last week, in the Chronicle of August the 22nd. Phrases like, I attempt to persuade ministers using every ounce of my experience to question and challenge the government, and resigning from the job I loved in government. It is clear that Steve Brine is in a very uncomfortable position, being a member of the Conservative Party while disagreeing with much of what his government is doing. He voted against having a referendum on Brexit, which his government then introduced. He represents a constituency which voted Remain, but went along with his government's decision to leave the EU, and he voted against his government's withdrawal bills earlier this year. He was a minister in the Department of Health, which has seen the ability of the NHS to meet the needs of its patients severely reduced. He clearly does not agree with his government's decisions on funding of schools. Now, I believe that Steve has been a conscientious constituency MP, but is now in the unenviable position of not agreeing with what his government is doing. Mind you, I expect that goes for a lot of us.
Now, David McLean, who is City Councillor for Bishops Waltham and Durley, writes the following. Sir, I wish to send a heartfelt vote of thanks to our local health services. I approached my local GP in Bishops Waltham with a possible health problem. I received a same-day appointment with the duty doctor. The duty doctor felt it could be serious and suggested he would make a consultant appointment. The appointment was confirmed and made within 4 days. A further appointment has been made for tests, date to be confirmed. We are forever being told how bad things are in the NHS. I saw none of that pessimism throughout the process. So thanks to our doctors and nurses. And if you have had a great experience, please write in. And David McLean lives in Morley Drive, Bishops Waltham.
This letter is entitled A Wider Loyalty. Sir, your correspondent Peter Hargreaves makes a fundamental mistake in his tirade against our MP, Steve Brine, letters August the 22nd. Mr. Brine was elected to Parliament by the voters of the Winchester and Chandlersford constituency, not by Winchester Conservatives, by which we must assume that Mr. Hargreaves means the local Conservative Association. The House of Commons Information Office states simply and clearly that MPs have responsibilities to three main groups: their constituents, Parliament, and their political party. Although it took him a long time to reach what must have been a very difficult decision, Mr. Brine decided to put what he perceives to be the interests of his constituents, all of them not just Winchester Conservatives, above blind loyalty to his party. Whatever one's political inclination, I would suggest that Mr. Brine should be congratulated for making that important decision of principle. In doing so, he has on this one central issue of the moment reflected the majority view within the constituency. Mr. Hargreaves compounds his error in the last paragraph of his letter. All that the local Conservative Association can do, if it is so inclined, is to select a new candidate in place of Mr. Brine to stand at the next general election, or if for some reason Mr. Brine chooses to resign his seat at a by-election. The decision on who represents Winchester and Chandlersford will be decided by all the voters in the constituency. As Mr. Hargreaves should know, the Tories do not have a monopoly on this parliamentary seat. And that's from Martin Holmes, Culverwell Gardens in Winchester.
This letter from Ned MacLeod of Downlands Way, South Wanston, is about cycle routes. Sir, Mr. Anderson, in the Chronicle letters of August the 22nd, makes a valid point on the design of cycle routes around our city. The width of cycle routes should be such that all users can pass without impeding others. In fact, the design of cycle routes that provide a sustainable future usage was discussed at a very well-attended talk hosted by Winchester's Café Scientifique. A well-designed route allows for the meander and wobble of pedestrians and cyclists. Indeed, it is the meander of younger and inexperienced cyclists that demands that cycle routes are made safe by span and by segregation from vehicular traffic. Mr. Anderson conflates two unrelated issues in his reasoning, though. The first being the long campaigned for South Wanston to safe cycle route, and the second being the impracticality of cycling along Worthy Road. Insofar as cost is an issue to Mr. Anderson, I note that he has not offered a costing for his 1 kilometre upgrade of Nuns Walk. The Department of Transport's own 2017 costings per kilometre to upgrade such a route, facilitating meandering, of course, at £140,000 to £190,000, that's per kilometre. The proposed South Wanston safe cycle route is 2.5 kilometres long, which at £304,000 represents comparably better value. The village of South Wanston needs a safe direct route towards Henry Beaufort School. In fact, the Department for Education mandates local authorities to work on the provision of sustainable school transport routes. Furthermore, the planning documentation for Barton Farm includes a proposal for this. The route already has a financial provision. It's worth noting that as pedestrians and cyclists, we will take the route that suits our needs best. We work on muscle power, you see. Providing safe and sustainable infrastructure that moves us around our city easily is a legacy we are all obliged to leave our children. We should welcome suitably designed cycle routes. That's from Ned MacLeod, Downlands Way, South Wanston.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860 836, or email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And we still have one more letter to be read.
This letter comes from Andrew Carruthers. Sir, if you are ever minded to faint and smash yourself up, may I recommend doing so at the Stony Lane No. 3 bus stop, where, in my experience, you will find a friendly bus driver, a crowd of well-wishers, likely to include an off-duty GP and her family, followed by a tremendous ambulance crew and kind and efficient staff in Winchester A&E to sort you out and send you home again in good order. All being done without there being a real chance to thank anybody, which I hasten to do now. Doubtless other bus stops are available. And that's from Andrew Carruthers, Salters Acres, Winchester.
And I'm glad we got that one in. Thank you, Daphne. Now, looking back, we go 200 years back, and the first piece is read by Jane.
200 years ago, Monday, August the 30th, 1819. On Tuesday last, the General Session of the Peace were holding in the Town Hall, Romsey, before Richard William Missing Esquire, the Recorder, and the Worshipful the Mayor. The learned Recorder, in his observations to the Grand Jury, lamented that the calendar was unusually large, and adverted particularly to offences charged against several persons for having riotously assembled. About 20 years ago, a duel took place at the encampment on Burselden Common between two officers, one of whom was shot through the head and instantly expired. Last week, in digging a grave vault, such was the encroachment that his skull rolled at the feet of the labourers.
100 years ago, Saturday, August the 30th, 1919. There are two items. The first general meeting of the Alsford and District branch of the Comrades of the Great War was held at the Peaceful Home on Tuesday evening, Mr. Taylor, the chairman, presiding over a good attendance. The secretary reported a membership of 72 and that there was balance in hand. It was agreed to ask Sir Joseph Tichborne, Baronet, to be the president of the local association. This is the second item. Thanks to the zealous initiation of Lady Watts, backed by the fertile invention of Captain G. Gybe, with hearty cooperation from a capable little band of players and singers, two very successful dramatic concerts were given in the Martyr Worthy Parish Hall yesterday afternoon and evening, at the benefit of parish expenses.
And 50 years ago, Saturday, August the 30th, 1969, and again there are two items. The first one is when Major Charles Chandler returned from his honeymoon in Switzerland, he found a telegram on the doormat. Within a few hours, he was on his way to Belfast. He was one of only 500 officers and men of the 1st Battalion, the Royal Hampshire Regiment, sent to trouble-torn Ulster to reinforce the army garrison there and maintain order in the face of bitter rioting. Belfast today is much the same as it was 2 weeks ago when Major Chandler arrived. The fires are out, some of the barricades are down, and fighting has abated. But tension and fear still grip this bruised and battered city. The damage has been done. The army has the job of making order out of chaos. That is why Major Chandler, whose home was at St. Cross, Winchester, and hundreds of other British soldiers were whisked off to the Emerald Isle. And the second item is about the excavations on Brook Street some years prior to the building of the Brooks. This season on the Brook Street site has shown that as earlier structures are uncovered, the flooring materials are inferior, and consequently the definition of the timber buildings and internal features is becoming more difficult. For example, House 11 seems to have earth floors with main posts to support the walls. The uncovering of such floors has been proceeded by following on the level at which bone, pottery and oyster shell are concentrated and are generally lying flat. The occurrence of a few hearths at such levels has shown that such faint indicators have some value. House 12 at the north end is the only building which still has a complete set of solid floors. In houses 9 and 10, the removal of all the flint walls has left the floors of the timber buildings as a set of islands.
This is 25 years ago, and again there are two articles. Friday, August the 26th, 1994. Angry villagers at Littleton, near Winchester, are queuing up to sign a petition to save local pub The Running Horse from closure. Some of them are even thinking of buying the pub themselves to keep it open. The petition, organised by retired probation officer Miss Joan McCarthy of Berriton Road, Hairstock, follows speculation that brewers Gibbs Mew of Salisbury may sell the pub to housing developers. "I object to it on principle," said Miss McCarthy. "A pub is an essential part of an English village. You can't just take the pub away without taking a tooth out of the centre of the village." Last Friday, she put her petition in the village post office shop. By Tuesday, it had acquired 125 signatures. She has now placed the petition in the Running Horse itself, with the permission of landlord Terry Westcott, and the list of signatures is growing. Miss McCarthy has also written to the brewers. "They said they hadn't yet decided what to do with the pub," she said. "They said they would either leave it as it is, develop it, or develop the land. But I'm not waiting for them to make up their minds. I feel this should be nipped in the bud." And the second article is about incinerators. "Don't build incinerators in Hampshire if you value the lives of your unborn children. That is the advice to Hampshire County Council by a lecturer in fetal and infant pathology. Dr. Vivian Howard was interviewed by the Hampshire Chronicle on his way to Dorset to speak at a meeting opposing plans for an incinerator near Poole. Hampshire County Council is preparing a strategy for dealing with waste disposal, and incineration is an option. A spokesman for the county said, "Hampshire County Council has asked operators to come up with a way of disposing of waste, including a scheme that would not use incinerators." Incineration remained a possibility, the spokesman confirmed. The doctor said, "The most vulnerable members of society are unborn children, because if their mother inhales them, she can pass the compounds across the placenta to the fetus.
Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is read by Frieda and will be followed by first person read by Jane. Thank you, Frieda.
The headline is Winchester Prison, Still a Disgrace. The above headline may be familiar. It was used in the Chronicle editorial on October the 4th last year, following the publication of a damning report by the Independent Monitoring Board, which castigated the appalling conditions under which men are being held at the jail. Last week, a number of inmates rioted after breaking out of their cells using cutlery and utensils from the prison kitchen. They ran amok for a period until a squad of prison officers were called in to restore order. Readers can see clips of the riot on the Chronicle website. This is not to excuse the inmates' behaviour, but if you keep people in bad conditions, is it a surprise if they behave badly? National newspapers are reporting that the government is considering an increase in spending for the National Health Service and the police and other voter-friendly initiatives before an autumn general election. Extra money must be found for the prison service. Austerity-driven cuts have seen staffing levels drop at Winchester and the built estate decline to an unacceptable level. If someone can break out of their cell with a spoon.
Almost Too Late for an EU Home by George Hayter. It's just 1 week since my wife and I got back from living in the Netherlands for 6 months. It's nice to be back in Britain, but we don't half miss Amsterdam. More of that brilliant town in a moment. First, let me urge you to move fast if you like the idea of making the continent your home for a while. Brexit is probably just 9 weeks away. After that, new rules could make it harder to stay there for more than 3 months. My wife and I got the money to move by letting out our four-bedroom home in Hampshire and using that income to rent a two-bedroom flat in the middle of Amsterdam. Finding tenants for our house was just the first hurdle we had to overcome. Internet sites told us we would need a council residency certificate to stay in Amsterdam, and that to get residency we would need a bank account. To get a bank account, we were warned we would need, guess what? A residency certificate. Fortunately, that catch-22 circle was an exaggeration. We engaged a Dutch relocation agency, which eventually found us a flat without needing either certificate or account. The agency secured the flat for us, despite there being 14 other parties competing for the tenancy. We think the landlord chose us because we were decades older than the others and therefore perceived as more responsible. Nevertheless, we had to agree to pay above the asking rent to seal the deal. Next problem, a Dutch bank account was needed for direct debits to pay the electric and water, but no Dutch bank would give us an account until we had a Dutch address. Reluctantly, the landlord agreed to pay the utilities on our behalf. All these negotiations involved weeks of stressful emailing, waiting and phoning. We wondered if the Dutch-based agency was a con trick. Did the flat even exist? On January the 31st, we set out for the Channel Tunnel in a car loaded to its roof with cardboard boxes, suitcases and two bicycles. After 8 hours, we rolled into Amsterdam and tracked down the Lulersgracht Canal, which is between the Rijksmuseum and Anne Frank's house. And yes, the flat did exist. The landlord's agent was there with the keys. We loved it right from the start. Huge living room overlooking the tree-lined canal. Everything close at hand. Cafes, bars, music venues and gorgeous 17th century architecture. English is spoken widely. It was easy to meet Dutch people in the bar a few doors along the canal. But months in, we still lacked friends. That began to change when someone in our flat building threw a party. It was 2 days before King's Day, the biggest date on the Dutch calendar, when everyone who is anyone in Amsterdam is dressed in orange and dancing on a moving boat. At the party, we met a boat owner with space for two more lively passengers. So we spent Amsterdam's big day in the midst of the fun on the beautiful canals. The other social breakthrough was my industrious wife starting an over 50s page on a meetup website. She organised a string of events involving walks, meals, concerts or art. Attendance varied from 3, including the two of us, up to about 10. Two attendees became close friends. So we were sad to leave Amsterdam. By the time we left, it was hot, and some days we used the celebrated Dutch cycleways to pedal as far as the North Sea. There are few cars in Amsterdam, and the air always seemed fresh. People are friendly. Only my major gripe, too many bikes, some heavily loaded and freight frighteningly fast. We'd saved up and didn't need to work, but we could have found casual jobs. Dutch is not always required. Many job ads posted outside shops and cafes are written in English.
Belgarum's alternative look at the news this week has two items, the first of which is read by Daphne.
And the first item is headed City's Favourite Dish. Winchester's takeaway habits have been revealed by a delivery firm celebrating its third birthday in Winchester. The new data from Deliveroo revealed that Friday at 7:33 p.m. is the most popular time for residents to order through their service. It also found that Subway on the Broadway served up the most popular dish. Their meatball marinara sandwich was the most ordered, followed by the chicken katsu curry from Wagamama on Jury Street. In third was the Zinger box meal from KFC on Upper Brook Street, followed by the Piri Piri chicken wings from Barcello's Piri Piri and Pad Thai from Koh Noi in 4th and 5th respectively. Both are on Jury Street. Since its launch in Winchester 3 years ago, more than 40 restaurants have signed up to the platform, creating work for more than 100 people. Harrison Foster, Regional Director, said, "Our whole team here at Deliveroo are delighted that our rapid growth in Winchester over the past 3 years means that customers have more choice, restaurants are able to increase their revenue, and riders have opportunity to choose well-paid, flexible work."
This item from Belgarum is called Post-Event Festival Advertising Delays. Belgarum was interested to see that Winchester has added... Belgarum was interested to see that Winchesterville has added an indoor event at the Guildhall on September the 27th. Maybe all that planning explains why, despite Belgarum's gentle chiding, they still haven't got round to removing the many posters still cluttering the villages of Hampshire over 2 months after the outdoor event. The festival ran on Saturday, June the 15th. Perhaps they will keep the same lineup, with headliners the magic numbers, and run the event on the same date next year. That would be a good way to save money on marketing. This photo was taken on Monday of last week in Twyford, and it shows one of the posters, very, very colourful, lots of information, but of course quite out of date.
Now we move on to the announcements, and here is the selection of events in and around Winchester in the coming days. On Tuesday the 3rd of September, the lunchtime concert at 1 p.m. in Winchester Cathedral is an organ recital by Timothy Easter. The event is free of charge, but there is a retiring collection. On Saturday the 7th of September, there will be two backstage tours of the Theatre Royal Winchester. At 9:30 a.m. the tour will be specifically for families, but all ages are welcome. And at 12 noon there will be a one-hour heritage tour taking in all levels of the theatre. For further details and booking, contact 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. On Wednesday the 11th of September at Badger Farm Community Centre at 7:30 p.m. there is a talk organised by the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust entitled Looking After the New Forest. Tickets cost £4 on the door and include tea or coffee. The Winchester Heritage Open Days take place in many venues throughout the city from Friday the 13th to Sunday the 22nd of September. A brochure of events and venues is obtainable from Winchester Information Centre at the Guildhall and from Winchester Discovery Centre. And here are a couple of events which might be of particular interest. On Thursday, the 12th of September, at Winchester Discovery Centre at 7:30 p.m, Professor Martin Biddle will give a talk entitled Why Did the Anglo-Saxons Build a Church in the Middle of a Ruined Roman City? That event costs £14 and can be only booked through the website www.winchesterheritageopendays.org. On Friday the 13th of September, again at the Winchester Discovery Centre, this time at 7 p.m, is an event entitled The English Language and Winchester. Tickets are free but must be pre-booked, again at the website www.winchesterheritageopendays.org. Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 30th of August at 6:15 a.m. and begins at 7:56 p.m. On Wednesday the 4th of September, it ends at 6:23 a.m. and begins at 7:45 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's 01962 711 998. Now we continue with items of general news, and the first item is read by Daphne. Thank you, Daphne.
And this follows up on an earlier item, and it's headed 150 prison inmates are transferred to other jails. Up to 150 prisoners have been moved from Winchester Prison following the riot last week. 19 inmates escaped from their cells after breaking through the walls using utensils and crockery from the kitchen. A special anti-riot team was called in to restore order. No one escaped from the jail itself. The 19 offenders have already been moved, but other inmates from the same wing are also being transferred to other jails in the south. The removal of inmates from the affected wing will allow surveyors to assess the damage and what alterations are needed to make the Victorian jail, built in the 1840s, more secure. The transfer will cause disruption for the families of inmates, most of whom will be from the Hampshire area, as Winchester is a Category B local prison, serving local courts such as Southampton and Winchester. A prison service spokesman told the Chronicle, "The 150 inmates, including the 19, are being transferred to other prisons. It is to allow us to make the necessary repairs. Investigations are ongoing. We are trying to work out what has happened and what repairs are needed. There is no timescale." The spokesman declined to comment on the adverse impact on families who will now have to visit their relatives in jails such as Exeter, Bristol, or in London, except to say, "It is not a punishment, it is an operational necessity. It is better to move them than crowd up the other wings." A family member emailed the Chronicle, "My boyfriend texted me and told me he is being moved to Exeter. It's not fair. He wasn't involved." The prison service spokesman declined to name the damaged wing, citing security issues, although national newspapers have reported it is D Wing.
This article is entitled Meetings with the People. A new innovative style of open meeting designed to give residents and others the opportunity to become involved with the work of the council, begins next month. The first forums will focus on each of the major projects: Central Winchester Regeneration, Station Approach, and Winchester Sport and Leisure Park. They will allow discussion between residents and councillors. Leader of the City Council, Councillor Lucille Thompson, said, "It's vital that we're having an open conversation with residents on the big projects we lead. We're looking to do things differently. And to start with, we want to ensure people have a voice in these three very important developments in our city. This is just the start of a process of making our council more transparent, and we will also be looking at other ways of improving resident engagement in democracy." Three forums will be held. On Friday, September the 13th, on Winchester Sport and Leisure Park, and that's at 3:30 p.m. in the Walton Suite of the Guildhall. The next one is on Monday, September the 16th, on the Station Approach development, and that's at 4:30 p.m. in the Walton Suite as well. And then on Tuesday, September the 24th, talking about Central Winchester redevelopment, we'll be at the Nutshell, which is the old Victorian building in the centre of the development area, King's Walk. And it's a drop-in information session at 3:30 and a question and answer session at 5:30.
This piece is headed, "Killer Loses His Bid for Appeal Against Conviction." A killer has lost a bid to appeal his conviction over the death of Winchester resident Carl Scott. David Gray, 37, was sentenced to an indeterminate hospital order after being found to have unlawfully killed Mr. Scott. Mr. Scott's body was found at his home in Birch Court, Thurmond Crescent, Stanmore, on March 22, 2017. Gray, who was charged with murder, was deemed unfit to enter a plea before his trial last year, and instead a trial of the facts was held and a jury was tasked with deciding whether Gray had unlawfully killed Mr. Scott. Gray has since applied for leave to appeal his conviction, but the Court of Appeal has refused. As previously reported, Winchester Crown Court was told during the 5-day trial how Mr. Scott was left to die after being attacked with an ornamental tomahawk axe and stabbed 5 times in the back. The jury was told how the 37-year-old was discovered several weeks later by a friend who had grown concerned. Home Office pathologist Dr. Basil Perdue told the court in April 2018 that a cocktail of drugs may have been a factor. He also said that the injury to the head was caused by a heavy object with a well-defined edge and it would have required severe force. Prosecutor Kerry Malin told the court how Gray, of no fixed abode, had spoken with a number of people about the death, including to Robert Edis, to whom Mr. Mailing said he had confessed his responsibility. The court heard that Gray allegedly told Mr. Edis a number of graphic details about the death, including how he had stabbed him while the pair were smoking crack cocaine together at Mr. Edis's flat. Gray was detained under the Mental Health Act the day before Mr. Scott's body was discovered, following an incident in the grounds of Winchester Cathedral. One of the officers drew a taser and Gray was eventually detained. However, while detained, the court heard Gray had called police several times, repeating that he had been taken hostage by Mr. Scott. Following his failed appeal, Gray will continue serving an indeterminate hospital order.
Thousands of people are expected to gather at Tichborne Park for the annual Alsford Show. This year's event will run on September the 7th between 8:30 a.m. and 6 p.m. There will be animals, local food and drink, shopping stalls, children's entertainment, a horticultural section, a poultry exhibition and egg show, a vintage and modern machinery section, birds of prey and more. There will be two viewing grandstands located around the main ring and one on the horse rings. Spectators do not need a ticket and are welcome to help themselves to a seat and enjoy the attractions. Guests must bring cash as there are no ATMs on the showground. A free shuttle service will run from outside Alsford Surgery and from the bus stop at Robertson Road to the showground from 9:30 a.m. The last bus will leave the showground at approximately 5 p.m. Dogs are welcome but must be kept on a lead at all times, and organisers are urging owners to clear up after their dog. Pets will not be allowed in the livestock area or livestock tents due to animal welfare concerns. On-site parking is free. Programmes will be on sale at entrance gates and from the secretary's tent. The Alsford Show is a registered charity run by volunteers. It was first run in 1908 and is organised by the Alsford and District Agricultural Society.
Oceans of hope despite the rubbish strewn in Solent. As some of you know, I love the water, and recently I was on my paddleboard in the Solent and was shocked by what I was seeing. All around were bits of plastic. Some were large plastic bottles, crisp packets and sweet wrappers, but others were much smaller, cotton wool buds, beads and even bits of glitter. It's often when you are up close and personal with the water that you realise just how bad it is. Did you know that for every person on this planet, there are now about 900 pieces of visible plastic in our oceans? Let's pause for a moment. Did you know that nearly 30% of the oxygen you are breathing comes from the oceans? There is a single phytoplankton with the highly unmemorable name of Prochlorococcus that is responsible for creating almost all of the ocean's oxygen. It is thought that 70% is created by just this one single-celled creature. It is tiny. 100 of these little plankton would fit side by side on the width of a human hair. And yet, they are critical to our survival. Last week, I listened to a lead scientist who said, "Never mind the forests. If we lose our oceans, we're in real trouble as a species." For 200 years, we've been tipping waste into the seas around the world. We foolishly believed that the waste will disappear because the seas are so big. But we are now paying the price for our stupidity. From areas of plastic the size of Texas to 1 million dead seabirds each year through ingesting the stuff, our oceans are struggling to survive. And the risk in the next 10 to 15 years is that we start to lose some of the building blocks to life. But there is still time to act. As residents of a coastal county with some amazing shorelines and beaches, we can each of us make a difference. So here are my three P's for making our county a leader in ocean conservation. 1. Plastic. Please ditch single-use plastic. It's time to get rid of plastic single-use water bottles. We don't need them. Crisp packets that can't be recycled. Cosmetics with microplastics in them. And toothbrushes with batteries that can't easily be recycled. We need to move beyond plastic carrier bags and start boycotting all goods that contain non-recyclable plastics. 2. Practical action. Join the fight for our beaches and shores. In Hampshire, the Wildlife Trust, National Trust and Marine Conservation Society all organise beach cleans. Why not join in? As well as being a great way to help fight back against pollution, they're a good place to make new friends. 3. Petition. Write to your MP and demand change in the way products are packaged. Meet your local store managers and talk about the need to change. The more we stand up and say we've had enough, the more suppliers are forced to act. These are tough times for our seas, but together we can really make a lasting difference.
Families are urged to do more exercise. Hampshire families are being urged to make the most of the sunshine by being active for 60 minutes a day. The message comes as research shows that physical activity not only keeps children fit, but also contributes to their social skills and emotional well-being. A recent survey from Change for Life and Disney UK revealed that only just over half of parents in the Southeast know that exercise can also build children's self-confidence, reduce anxiety and improve their self-esteem. Councillor Judith Grzejewski, Executive Member for Public Health at Hampshire County Council, said, "Enjoyment is one of the great motivators to children being active, which is why the Change for Life and Disney Summer campaigns draw upon children's favourite stories to make sport and physical activity fun. If you can get your children to be active, they will often be happier and more confident too." The UK Chief Medical Officers recommend that children do at least 60 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity every day. Yet just 20% of boys and 14% of girls meet this target. Change for Life's 10-minute shake-up games are inspired by characters from Disney.
City bus drivers are set to take 7 days of industrial action over pay. Bus union RMT last week confirmed 7 days of industrial action will take place in September on Blue Star buses based in Eastleigh, Totten and Poole, after drivers, cleaners and ticket office staff rejected a revised pay offer from the company. Members have been instructed not to work any overtime over their contracted 40 hours and not to work on their rest days for 1 week, commencing from midnight on Wednesday, September the 4th, and 11:59pm hours on Tuesday, September the 10th. RMT General Secretary Mick Cash said, "Our members on Blue Star buses have rejected the company's paltry revised pay offer, which is why they will be mounting a week of industrial action in September. Bus drivers at Blue Star are typically expected to work excessive hours at an average of 50 per week, including at least one fixed rota at 57 hours, without enhanced payments being made, even though they are contracted for 40 hours only. The company will need to come back with a realistic proposal to settle the dispute, and until they do so, our members are left with no choice but to take industrial action. The union remains unavailable for talks." Oh, I beg your pardon. It was "the union remains available for talks." The Chronicle contacted Blue Star with no response at the time of going to press.
Relay runners striding out to German twin city of Gießen. Gießen, here we come. A group of Winchester runners have been making good progress in their run to the city's twin town in Germany. They are due to arrive in Gießen tomorrow afternoon, Friday. After setting off last Friday, they passed the halfway stage on Monday, reaching Brussels. The photo on the right is of a changeover in the middle of the day showing the sponsors who have donated £2,500 to Winchester Hospice. The photo shows Adrian Horton, Emma Carter, Robert Carter and Steve Goodwin. One of the runners, Rob Carter, managing director of Millgate Homes, reported to the Chronicle, "Baking hot!" As the Chronicle went to press, the relay was passing through Maastricht in the Netherlands. The team is running in relay to the German town of more than 540 miles and taking in five countries in 8 days. They started by going cross-country along the 100-plus miles of the South Downs Way. The run mirrors that of last October, when a group from Gießen ran a relay to Winchester. The Winchester athletes aim to do it a day quicker. The youngest is 11 and the oldest 67, and at least two of the team will run at any one time. The mayor, Councillor Eleanor Bell, started the relay from the Broadway at 7 a.m. last Friday. An early start for the mayor. The evening before, the runners will have a pasta supper at the Italian restaurant Ask on the High Street. Already, Through sponsorship and donations, the group expects to raise more than £3,000 for the Winchester Hospice appeal. A contingent of the Giessen runners will run the last 20 kilometres, with a police escort due for the last 3 kilometres, and the Mayor of Giessen will be at the finish line, along with Winchester's former Mayor, Councillor Frank Pearson, and his wife Anne. They are due to arrive at 3 p.m. on Friday, August the 30th. Lead organiser Adrian Horton said, "It's quite a logistical undertaking, from funding and booking overnight accommodation in just the right places, planning a safe running route and working out which sections each runner will tackle. But we are confident that we will get there on time."
This piece is headed TV Fred to open new complex. TV anchorman Fred Dynage will officially open a new retirement complex in Orsford next month. McCarthy and Stone is inviting local retirees to join news presenter Fred Dynage for the official opening of Wayfarer Place Retirement Living Plus Development on Wednesday, September the 11th. From 11 a.m. until 1 p.m, the public is welcome to visit Wayfarer Place and meet Mr. Dynage and be treated to a buffet lunch in the homeowner's lounge. And at 11:30 a.m. there will be a talk from the BIP about his successful television career. Fred said, "I'm very much looking forward to visiting Wayfarer Place and to spending time with people of Orsford. I look forward to taking a tour of McCarthy and Stone's new Retirement Living Plus development, and I hope local people will join me at the official opening. It's set to be a great day." Kiara Hilly, Divisional Marketing Manager for McCarthy and Stone, said, "A warm welcome awaits local retirees and their families who attend our event on Wednesday the 11th of September to take a closer look at Wayfarer Place, while also taking the opportunity to chat to everyone's favourite news anchor, Fred Dynage. The development has attracted a great deal of interest, and we look forward to opening our doors and showcasing the many ways in which Wayfarer Place is enriching the lives of New Orsford retirees. Designed for over 70s, Wayfarer Place on the Dean features an on-site bistro, a homeowner's lounge ideal for socialising with friends and new neighbours, beautifully landscaped gardens in which to relax, and a convenient guest suite should friends or relatives wish to stay. Homeowners benefit from having an estates management team on site 24 hours a day, and tailored care packages and domestic support are available for those who need a helping hand. The security entrance system and emergency call points provide added peace of mind for homeowners and their families." This is accompanied by a picture of the new development, which looks very grand, very large and very new.
Almost 30,000 complaints have been made to Hampshire County Council about potholes and damaged roads. The figures are based on a Freedom of Information request by the Federation of Small Businesses, FSB. They show that the county received over 29,610 queries or complaints about potholes and road surfaces over the last year. In all, 31,946 complaints were made across Southampton City Council, the Isle of Wight Council, Hampshire County Council and Portsmouth City Council areas. The total spend on repairs in the South East region was £83,008,026.389. And the total number of complaints was 87,907. Out of 3,998 claims, only 808 were successful, with £245,356 in compensation being paid out. The report has revealed that nationwide, local authorities receive a road complaint every 46 seconds. The FSB is now calling for more funding from local authorities from central government. Similarly, it wants better coordination between utility companies and these authorities. FSB National Chairman Mike Cherry said, "Potholes are a major concern for the nation's small businesses. Our members rely heavily on the road network, with their staff, customers and trade deliveries dependent on fast and efficient road networks. Poorly looked after roads not only hamper their ability to do business, but lead to damaged vehicles." Hampshire County Council Transport Chief, Councillor Rob Humby, said, "Local authorities are facing budget pressures and rising demands. It is imperative a share of national funding is allocated for roads maintained by councils. With motoring taxes now raising some £34 billion annually, it is not unreasonable for road users to expect to see more of this money reinvested in maintenance. The government provides 43 times more per mile for Highways England roads, which make up just 3% of the country's road network, than they give councils to look after the other 97% of the network. Hampshire County Council is committed to providing well-maintained roads and adds £10 million per annum from local funds to support road maintenance. But the chronic underfunding of local road maintenance by successive national governments has left local councils with little choice other than presiding over a managed decline of the road network." A spokesperson for Southampton City Council said, "An increase in funding from central government directly targeted at highway maintenance would be welcomed. Settlements we currently receive from the Department for Transport, supported by local funding to a level that can be afforded, are merely able to stabilise a long-term decline in highway conditions." And that's illustrated by a picture of a horrendous pothole full of water, looking like a real death trap.
City power cuts much less likely. The curse of power cuts in Winchester city centre should be much less likely following investment by Scottish and Southern electricity networks. The SSEN project to boost the resilience of the electricity infrastructure for homes and businesses in Winchester has now been completed. Costing £1.3 million, the programme was designed to strengthen power supplies. Starting in October 2017, the work saw the installation of over 1.9 kilometres of new underground cable, 13 link boxes, and the transfer of 81 existing services to the new section of infrastructure, all carried out in stages along a route taking in Jury Street, the High Street, and other adjacent roads. A spokesman for Green's Bar and Kitchen in Jury Street said, "Initially, we did have concerns about how these works would affect ourselves and other local businesses near to the areas that Scottish and Southern electricity networks were proposing to work on, especially around busy times during weekends and the festive season. Being able to speak to the project team and build an understanding of their needs to carry out the upgrade works, along with our needs as a business and our customers' expectations, meant that we were able to work together to accommodate both schedules with minimum disruption to our customers and staff." Kevin Cracknell, SSEN's Network Upgrades Manager, said it was important to both SSEN and Hampshire County Council that these works were carried out sensitively to accommodate the varying needs of our customers in Winchester. "In addition to letter drops and engagement events, we listened to the concerns of local businesses and, wherever possible, carried out our excavation works near their premises either during the night or outside of their usual operating times. This now ensures the best possible service to customers."
This headline invites you to get ready to be gunged for Naomi House at Jack's Place. Hundreds of people will be stumbling through gunge pools, being fired at with cannons and pelted with paint as part of a fun run. The event will be held at Fairthorne Manor at Curdridge near Bishop's Waltham on Sunday, September the 8th. Organised by Naomi House and Jack's Place, the 5-kilometre mix-up has already attracted more than 250 runners. The event is to raise money for the charity, which is based at Sutton Scotney, and provides respite, emergency and end-of-life care to children and young people across Hampshire and surrounding counties. Events fundraiser at Naomi House and Jack's Place, Charlotte Patrick said, "Anticipation at our fundraising office is extremely high as we count down the days until our very first 5 kilometre mix-up. The Hampshire Rainbow Run has proved very popular over the past few years, so we are excited to step it up a notch with gunge, foam, bubbles and even more powdered paint." Charlotte added, "It's a family-friendly event that's suitable for children aged 5 and above, and we look forward to seeing lots of groups of family, friends and colleagues take on this fabulously messy fun run in support of the children, young adults and families in our care. Entry for the 5K mix-up is £20 for adults and £15 for children." A price to be paid for kind of being covered in gunge. And there's a wonderful picture with these lovely smiley people absolutely plastered with blue stuff. So that's what you're going to be in for.
The Bridge Patisserie in Winchester is celebrating 20 years in business, serving coffee, lunch and cake to local residents. To celebrate, staff have been hosting a week of events which began on August the 26th. The independent shop first opened in 1999, originally occupying number 20 Bridge Street. After 5 years, the patisserie expanded to occupy both 19 and 20 Bridge Street, offering its open cafe seating area. Owner Moira Windsor, who lives above the shop with her husband Joe Morris, 5-year-old son Theo, and puppy Daphne, said, "I still cannot believe it's been 20 years. It certainly makes me feel old. Serving coffee, lunch and cakes to Winchester locals and visitors to the city is a way of life. And we love being an independent business at this lively end of town." She added, "We were keen to celebrate our 20-year milestone by having fun with our local customers and saying a big thank you to the other Winchester businesses that have supported us over the years." The week of events started on Monday with an evening hosted by independent coffee roaster and supplier Motso Coffee, a supplier of the patisserie for 20 years. Founder and owner Grant Lang spoke about his recent travels to Congo and how in one of the poorest countries in Africa, Motso is helping to progress a more sustainable future for the people of the Muangano community. Today, and in fact that's yesterday, Thursday, the patisserie hosted a pop-up market for local artists, ceramicists and printmakers. And tomorrow, which is in fact today as we are now Friday, will be Free Cake Friday. Every customer who buys a coffee will be given a free slice of cake. To wrap up the week of events, Party Time Saturday will be on October the 31st. Staff are keeping the main details of the event a surprise, but say the doors are open to everyone and that guests are certainly going to like it. The full programme of events can be viewed at thebridgepatisserie.co.uk with leaflets also available at the cafe. Ticketed events are available to book online.
Crossing delays. The completion of a new pedestrian crossing in Winchester has been delayed. The County Council scheme, costing £145,000, had envisaged the new crossing on Wales Street to have been completed by Tuesday, August the 20th. But whilst the drop kerbs and new paving has been installed, the road markings have yet to be painted. The reasons were unclear as the Chronicle went to press. The crossing is intended to make life safer for the high number of pedestrians using the route between Winnell and the city centre.
This is a plea for more money to fund the covert scheme. Civic chiefs have asked for an additional £77,000 in funds after revealing the budget for a city centre improvement scheme had been underestimated. Winchester City Council's Cabinet was asked to approve the additional funding yesterday for the St Maurice's Covert Scheme and raise the budget by £90,000, bringing the total to £225,000. According to a report that was set to go before councillors on the City Council's Cabinet as the Chronicle went to press, the Business Improvement District have committed £8,000 and the Steele family £5,000 towards the improvements, the remaining £77,000 funded by reserves. As previously reported, the project, being funded mostly by the Town Forum and the City Council, is seeking to improve St Maurice's Covert, the link between the High Street, Market Lane and the Outer Close, to reduce its neglect and magnetism for antisocial behaviour. The aim is to declutter the space, removing the waste bins and bollards, and improving the links to the Outer Close and Cathedral, while lighting will be improved, a new ceiling installed, and new paving laid to make the area more attractive and highlight its heritage. The gravestones, which do not have graves underneath, would be relocated to inside the tower of St Maurice's Church. Appealing for the additional funds, the report said, additional work on the scheme, including a number of design changes and more broadly escalating costs associated with type of enhancement project, has seen projected costs, including contingency, rise up to £225,000. In particular, the procurement of the surface works at the start of this year saw quotes returned significantly higher than expected, and considerably above the cost estimates originally produced when the original budget was set in 2017. Escalating costs therefore remain a risk to this type of project, given wider current market conditions. However, the report adds some of that money could be returned to the reserves depending on the outcome of a grant application. It said, the Council has also submitted an expression of interest in Historic England's High Street Heritage Action Zones scheme, citing the covert works, with a request for a £100,000 contribution towards its costs. The Council is unlikely to know the outcome of this before December this year, so the scheme cannot rely on a formal bid being successful if it is to progress to implementation in 2019. However, depending on timing of the outcome of the request for funding and assuming a favourable result, some of the scheme costs could be met by Historic England, which will release funds back to the major investment reserve.
Caravan to nurture memories for people with dementia. A retro-style reminiscence caravan designed to help those with dementia has opened at a local care home. Residents, families and members of the Alzheimer Society joined the Mayor, Councillor Eleanor Bell, to launch the new initiative at Westacre Nursing Home in Sleepers Hill. It has been designed to bring back memories of traditional holidays for the home's residents as part of the Reminiscence Therapy Project. It is a treatment that uses all the senses to help individuals with dementia recall memories. Councillor Bell, who cut the ribbon, said, "This is a fantastic initiative, and it was brilliant to see how warmly the caravan was received by Westacre's residents, their families, and the local community who joined us on the day. I hope many people living with dementia will be able to benefit from the caravan." The caravan comes complete with designs true to the decade, including dark wood panelling, butterfly net curtains, and a blue speckled fitted sofa, along with vintage biscuits, a tea set and traditional games. And it's illustrated by a picture of the mayor and members of the staff at the home. They're all holding umbrellas up, so it must have been one of the wet days we had recently. And the very old-fashioned-looking caravan is behind them. Directly in front of them is a row of small children, also with umbrellas. I'm not too sure they know what it's about, but they're certainly smiling very broadly.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser, Jane Thomas and Sue Ganaway. Thank you to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thank you to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Jane Rutter.
Goodbye.
And Frieda Bates.
Goodbye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye, and do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label in the wallet, please ensure the cord attached to the memory is fully inside. Thank you.